Bhava, the emotions of a devotee. And as we explained before, we all want to get a taste in life. Material life means that we can't believe how there can be a full and satisfying and healthy taste by being a servant. Of course, on the material platform, servitude means suffering. But on the spiritual platform, servitude is the highest thing. So much so that even the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants to be a devotee, a servant. And we're finding out how all the extraordinary personalities want to be servants of the Supreme Lord. And we find that even in the intimate relationships of Krishna with his devotees in Vrindavan, Krishna praying, love of Krishna, inspires those devotees with the spirit of servitude. Even surprisingly, when those devotees are in the position of Krishna's superior. We've been discussing Nanda Maharaj. And today we'll discuss a little of Kali Yashoda. And also Krishna's elders, his teachers, they all are imbued with the spirit of servitude. Although they're acting as Krishna's parents, guides. In other words, we're learning more and more how it's such an exalted thing. In fact, there's no more exalted thing than to be a servant of Krishna. And the emotions that are contained within service to Krishna are completely fulfilling and satisfying. There's no need to fear devotional service if we properly apply ourselves under guidance. We'll have a wonderful dynamic and an expansive life in Krishna consciousness. We'll read some letters or some quotations from Srila Prabhupada today talking about how to improve our service emotions, service attitude. We'll be dealing with things such as envy. We'll be dealing with things like guidance and not wanting to take guidance. And we'll always be mentioning the ultimate goal of devotional service, which is service to Krishna in Krishna Leela. So, first we'll start with a section from Chaitanya Charitamrita in which Jagannath Mishra is going to show that even if he hears that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he doesn't consider it. He just continues to treat Lord Chaitanya as his son. And he does his service to his son, which is to educate, protect, and maintain his son. And after that, we'll go to the Bhagavatam, which, from where the verse comes from on the board, and we'll recite that verse, which is about Mother Yashoda seeing the whole universe, a cosmic manifestation within the mouth of her little child. And this way, we hope to have a very fascinating and tasty experience in the emotions of being a devotee. In the coming days, we'll be discussing Sakhiras, how the friends of Lord Krishna in Vrindavan, although they're his friends, still have the spirit of service. And then we'll conclude with a discussion of Madhuryavas. And we'll see how even the queens in Dwarka and the gopi girls in Vrindavan say that they are the main servants of Lord Krishna and they simply aspire to serve Krishna's lotus feet. Well, hopefully by the end of all this, we'll all be inspired more to increase our devotional service in a healthy, balanced way. The fascinating thing about love of Krishna and Vatsalya Ras, parental love, is that although one is the superior, acting the superior role to Krishna, you get a chance for serving the Lord. That's why Srila Prabhupada always explains that holding God to be the Father, as is conventionally done in Western religion, reduces your opportunity for service. Because in a traditional society, what does a father do? A father serves the children. A father provides. A father maintains. So, simply to consider God as father doesn't satisfy Vaishnavas. In fact, in the spiritual world, there is no conception of a rasa with God as father. That conception is there in Western religion in order to bring about certain feelings, beginning feelings for the Supreme Lord. But Vaishnavas, they, if anything, are interested in becoming the father of the Lord, because that gives a chance to render service to the Lord. Rather than the Lord being the father and your order supplier, the Vaishnava becomes the father of the Lord and supplies the orders of the Lord, render service in that way. I hope by your understanding this, you'll see how service is everything. The more service, the more important a particular position becomes. And the less service, the least importance is there to that position. That's why Vaishnavas decry merging into impersonal Brahman. Who wants to merge and give up individuality? Then you can't be a servant. And without devotional service, everything is hell. So this is a very interesting way to analyze situations in life. In fact, this is the genuine, bona fide way to analyze life. Where is the service? Where are the service opportunities? The taste of devotional service is so sweet that a devotee doesn't mind even being in hellish conditions as long as there's service to the Supreme Lord. That is recited in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam. Narayana Padasarve Nakutashtana Vidyati Sarva Prabhara Narahes Abhita Yarta Darshana. A Narayana Pada, a devotee who is exclusively attached to the Lord, doesn't mind the heavenly planets, the hellish planets, the middle planetary system. He sees them all as equal, as long as there's service opportunity for the Supreme Lord. If there's no service opportunity, or reduced service opportunity, then that's not a desirable situation. That's why Lord Chaitanya himself teaches us to pray. Mama janmani janmani ishvare bhavata bhaktir aityiti trayi. Birth after birth, I don't mind taking birth in this material world again and again, as long as I have service to the lotus feet of the Lord. Let's hear what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has to say about the attitude of Jagannath Mishra, Lord Chaitanya's father. And of course you know that Jagannath Mishra in Navadvipa is Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan, and Sachi Mata in Navadvipa is Yashoda in Vrindavan. On another occasion, Jagannath Mishra, seeing the mischievous acts of his son, gave him lessons in morality after rebuking him greatly. Jagannath Mishra is concerned. My son is making so much mischief. What about his future? I am the father. I have to train him properly. So I'll give him dharma siksha. I'll give him instructions in how to behave properly according to religious teachings. Fair enough. Every father is expected to do that. On that very night, Jagannath Mishra lowers after he instructed his son. He dreamt that a brahmana had come before him, speaking these words in great anger. My dear Mishra, you do not know anything about your son. You think him your son, and therefore you rebuke and chastise him. Jagannath Mishra replied, this boy, he may be a demigod, a mystic yogi, or a great saintly person. It doesn't matter what he is, for I think he's only my son. So the brahmana is in the dream of Jagannath Mishra is letting him know. You don't understand who your son is. You think he's your son, and therefore you try to give him dharma, siksha, moral teachings. But what is Jagannath Mishra's response? He can be a deva, demigod. He can be a siddha, perfect mystic yogi. He can be a muni, a great yang, a great sage. Doesn't matter, he's my son. And I'm going to treat him in that way. So then the brahmana replies, if your son is a transcendental mystic boy with self-effulgent, perfect knowledge, what is the use of your education? If someone is self-illuminated, self-sufficient in knowledge. In other words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is the only person who is self-illuminated and self-sufficient in knowledge. Obviously, such a person has no need for a dharma siksha. You don't educate in religious teachings, the source of all dharma. But what was Jagannath Mishra's reply? Very interesting. Even if my son is not a common man, but Narayan himself, still it is the duty of a father to instruct his son. In other words, nothing is going to interfere with Jagannath Mishra's Vatsalya Rasa, his love of Godhead in parental love. Even if my son's Narayan, we have this father-son relationship. That's all I know about. So, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami comments. In this way, Jagannath Mishra and the brahmana discussed the principles of religion in the dream, yet Jagannath Mishra was absorbed in unalloyed parental mellow and did not want to know anything else. This being the father of the Lord gives such an opportunity for service in which you think, Krishna depends on me. Nimai depends on me for maintenance, for protection. So the devotee doesn't give up that feeling. With the help of Yogamaya, the Lord's internal potency, the devotee overlooks the opulence of the Lord, even though it's present. This is the amazing thing about Krishna Prema, love of Krishna. Even the devotee who has a spontaneous relationship with the Lord in love can see the opulences of the Lord. Still, he overlooks it all and just sees the relationship that you're my son, or you're my friend, or you're my lover. Just like if there's a big feast with 100 preparations and you have a favorite preparation that you like so much, you can overlook all the other preparations just to take your favorite preparation. Similarly, the devotee can see all the aishwarya and the opulence of the Supreme Lord, but no, his relationship of spontaneous love causes him just to see the Lord as son or friend or lover. But in the purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes our Bhagavatam verse. It says, in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 8, 45, it is said, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is worshipped with exalted hymns by all the Vedas and Upanishads, and by great personalities through Sankhya Yoga in the mode of goodness, was considered by Mother Yashoda and Nanda to be their own little son. Similarly, Jagannath Mishra also considered Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu his beloved little boy, although Mahaprabhu is worshipped with all veneration by learned brahmanas and saintly persons. So let's hear this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, which is spoken in the chapter in which Lord Krishna shows his mother the universal form. In this way, we can get some kind of feeling for how the spirit of service is always there, even when the devotee sees the opulences of the Supreme Lord. He or she doesn't give up the parental service. And then later, in the coming days, we'll hear about friendship, how even in intimate friendship, there's service. And also in Madhurya Ras, conjugal love, there's service. So we might as well become accustomed to devotional service, because that's all that's going on. Shubhani Sadhisha
Shubhani Sadhisha
Sankhya Yoga Ishta Sattachai
Sankhya Yoga Ishta Sattachai
Upahiya Mahana Mahatmyam
Upahiya Mahana Mahatmyam
Hayam Samanya Sattvajam
Hayam Samanya Sattvajam
Chaya Chopani Sadhisha
Chaya Chopani Sadhisha
Sankhya Yoga Ishta Sattachai
Sankhya Yoga Ishta Sattachai
Upahiya Mahana Mahatmyam
Upahiya Mahana
Hayam Samanya Sattvajam
Hayam Samanya Sattvajam
Chaya Chopani Sadhisha
Chaya Chopani Sadhisha
Sankhya Yoga Ishta Sattvachai
Sankhya Yoga Ishta Sattvachai
Upahiya Mahana Mahatmyam
Upahiya Mahana
Hayam Samanya Sattvajam
Hayam Samanya Sattvajam
Chaya Chopanishadvishya
Chaya Chopanishadvishya
Sankhya Yoga Ishta Sattvachai
Sankhya Yoga Ishta Sattvachai
Upahiya Mahana Mahatmyam
Upahiya Mahana Mahatmyam
Hayam Samanya Sattvajam
Hayam Samanya Sattvajam
Chaya Chopanishadvishya
Chaya Chopanishadvishya
Sankhya Yoga Ishta Sattvachai
Sankhya Yoga Ishta Sattvachai
Upahiya Mahana Mahatmyam
Upahiya Mahana Mahatmyam
Samanya Sattvajam
Hayam Samanya Sattvajam
Chaya Chopanishadvishya
Chaya Chopanishadvishya
Sankhya Yoga Ishta Sattvachai
Sankhya Yoga Ishta Sattvachai
Upahiya Mahana Mahatmyam
Upahiya Mahana Mahatmyam
Samanya Sattvajam
Hayam Samanya Sattvajam
Vaishnavis
Chaya Chopanishadvishya
Chaya Chopanishadvishya
Sankhya Yoga Ishta Sattvachai
Sankhya Yoga Ishta Sattvachai
Upahiya Mahana Mahatmyam
Upahiya Mahana Mahatmyam
Hare Krishna,
ఆత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత్మజాత
And by studying the Vedic knowledge of the Upanishads. Samkhya Yoga. By reading the literature of Samkhya Yoga. And by the great sages and devotees, or by reading Vaishnava Tantra, Pancharatras, Upadhyamana Mahatmyam, whose glories are worshipped by all these Vedic literatures. Unto the Supreme Personality of God. Sa, she, amanyata, considered ordinary.
Atmajam,
as her own son.
As her own son.
Translation. The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are studied throughout the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Samkhya Yoga, and other Vaishnava literature. Yet, Mother Yashoda considered that Supreme Person her ordinary child. I'll read parts of the purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita by the Supreme Personality Godhead Krishna, the purpose of studying the Vedas is to understand Him, Vedaisya Sarvayahamita Vedya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to Sanatana Goswami that there are three purposes in the Vedas. One is to understand our relationship with Krishna, Sambandha. Another is to act according to that relationship, Abhideya. And the third is to reach the ultimate goal, Prayojana. The word Prayojana means necessities. And the ultimate necessity is explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prema humartha maha. The greatest necessity for a human being is the achievement of love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here we see that Mother Yashoda is on the highest stage of necessity, for she is completely absorbed in love for Krishna. This is a very interesting point about necessities, because people, especially these days, consider themselves to be practical and diligent about their necessities in life. The rent must be paid, the mortgage has to be paid, the car has to be fixed, bills have to be paid, one has to advance in one's job, money has to increase. These are all considered the necessities. And sometimes, when a person takes up Krishna consciousness, the parents or the family members or former acquaintances, they accuse, you're neglecting your necessities. In other words, we are dealing with our necessities. We're properly situated. But you are taking up Krishna consciousness. You're abandoning all your necessities. But here, we find out that there is an ultimate necessity which you cannot ever neglect, although most people neglect it. The ultimate necessity is to develop love of God. And Mother Yashoda is the perfect example of dealing with the highest necessity, because she's completely absorbed in love of Krishna. So much so that she doesn't even think Krishna is God. She's just totally captured by the attractiveness of Krishna. As you explained the other day, the culmination of knowing Krishna is to love Krishna. It's not that the residents of Vrindavan are on a lower platform because they don't think Krishna is God. No, they are on the highest platform of knowledge because they're acting with the Supreme Lord as lover or friend or parent. In this way, the loving exchanges can be completely perfect and unimpeded. And that way Krishna gets so much pleasure. Krishna himself says, so much worship is not what I need. I want to feel the pure, spontaneous love of my devotees. So he has Vrindavan for that. In Vaikuntha, as you know, there's awe and reverence and opulence and worship. But the Lord's maximum pleasure is found in Vrindavan. How did this verse come about in which the glories of Mother Yashoda are exalted? First, we hear that there are different types of Vedic literature, and they present different levels of the Absolute Truth, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, the impersonal presence of the Lord, the presence of the Lord as Super Soul, and the presence of the Lord as the personality of Godhead. Different Vedic literatures highlight each of these three different levels. But Mother Yashoda, she doesn't care to understand Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. She's not interested in impersonal Brahman, Super Soul realization, or even knowledge of Bhagavan. She's just loving Krishna as her child. That's how her service manifests. And she doesn't give up that attitude of Vatsalya Ras, even in the face of inconceivable opulences shown to her by her little boy. So how did this Leela start? Krishna was already known in the village of Vrindavan for making mischief, for doing things like breaking into people's houses as a little boy, looking for milk products, and if he didn't find any milk products to steal, then what would he do? He would pass urine in school in the person's house. Don't tell your parents that this is the kind of God you're worshiping. But Krishna is showing, if the Absolute Truth is perfect and complete, everything is there, including childhood mischief. So, the residents of Vrindavan would come and accuse Krishna in front of Mother Yashoda. Your boy has done this, your boy has done that. You see, as you were speaking yesterday, in Vrindavan there is gossip, and there is, you know, accusation. But it's all for Krishna's pleasure. So they would present the complaints to Mother Yashoda, but actually their desire, of course, is not malicious. They're just churning the ocean of loving exchanges, because no matter what they say, they're talking about Krishna. Your boy Krishna did this, your boy Krishna did that. What are you going to do, Mother Yashoda? You have to do something about your boy. And then Krishna is right there while they're making the accusations, and he's smiling very sweetly. So everyone just forgets their accusations. So, still, the idea was there in the village of Vrindavan. How are we going to get Mother Yashoda angry at Krishna? Not out of malice. In the material world, you want to get someone angry just to get back at them. You did this to me, now I'm going to do this. Let's see. But no, the residents of Vrindavan have completely pure motives. They just want to see this rasa manifests in a certain way, parental love. Let's see if Mother Yashoda can show her love for her son in anger. So, this time the cowherd boys, the little cowherd boys, came up with a plot. They reported to Mother Yashoda that Krishna, little Krishna, had eaten dirt. Even Balaram was part of the conspiracy. Now, the Bhagavatam doesn't exactly say whether it was true or not, because it doesn't matter. What matters is the love in the situation. Although there's a hint given by Srila Prabhupada that it was true. So they presented to Mother Yashoda, the little boys, they said, Krishna's eating dirt, he's eating dirt. And what was Mother Yashoda's reaction? You can see the service immediately. Oh no, what is he doing now? I have so many tasty milk products in my house, and now my little boy is eating dirt. So she immediately addressed Krishna. What are you doing? And what was Krishna's response? He was the perfect child, showing the completeness of the absolute truth. He said, they're lying. You know how little children do that. You catch them doing something. No, all these complaints are false. They're lying. I never did it. So that was Krishna's response. They're all lying. Balaram and the other little boys, they've conspired against me. It's not true. So, unless you understand Bhagavad Dharma, the science of God, you'll be bewildered by this. You'll think this is just some kind of Hindu mythology. No, you're hearing the completeness of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Everything is there. Janmadiyasadha. That's the first verse in Bhagavatam. The Absolute Truth is that from which everything emanates. So Krishna is the source of perfect naughty behavior. Whether in childhood or in romance, Krishna is the perfection of naughtiness in teenage romance. All without flaw, all without material contamination. This is hard for people to understand because no one knows what is God. At best, they think God is the supreme controller. That's as far as they know. Or God is the maintainer. But they can never dream that Krishna has the perfection of all qualities as a little boy or as a teenager. That's what it means when you say God is perfect and complete. Everything, absolutely everything is there. So Krishna, play that role. No, Mother, they're lying. Why are you in anxiety, in other words? I haven't done it. These boys are conspiring against me. So, what did Mother Yashoda say? She was fearful. Is my home adequate to feed my child? She's feeling that sense of, what can I do? Why is my boy done this? But Krishna said, no, they're all lying, I haven't done it. So, being a good mother, what's Mother Yashoda's next response? Not that, okay, you said you didn't do it, I believe you. No good mother will do that. Oh, you say you didn't do it? Very good, open your mouth. So, what happened when little Krishna opened his mouth? Mother Yashoda looked in, and what did she see? She saw the whole cosmic manifestation, including herself and Vrindavan. She saw time. She saw karma. She saw the desires of all living entities and their reactions. She saw the complete picture of existence in the mouth of her child. So, what was she thinking? She was afraid. What's going on in the mouth of my child? She never thought, oh, this is God. She thought, oh, this is my child. What's happening in his mouth? Is this for real, what I'm seeing? You see, even in this most intense situation of the presence of the inconceivable opulences of the Supreme Lord, she's still thinking, he's my son. She doesn't give up her maternal relationship. So she becomes afraid. And she starts to question herself. Am I dreaming? No, I can't be dreaming. My eyes are open. I'm wide awake. Have I been bewildered by some kind of demigod Maya? No. I'm just an insignificant woman. Why would the demigods want to bewilder me? Well then, what else? Maybe I'm deranged. Maybe I'm unhealthy. No, that can't be so. Everyone knows I'm in perfect health. Then she just concluded, well, what I'm seeing in Krishna's mouth must be due to his being not an ordinary child. That was her conclusion. He said, he's my son. He says, not an ordinary son, but he's my son. So then, what was her next? What did she do next? What did she resort to? She was perplexed. She couldn't understand this in the mouth of my son. Never thought of it. Oh, this is God. Because she never thought Krishna is God, and she was bewildered and perplexed. What did she do? She started to pray to God for her son Krishna. She offered prayers to Lord Vishnu. Please protect my son. Please forgive me for thinking I'm so important. Forgive me for thinking Nanda Maharaj is my husband, Krishna is my child, and Vrindavan is my king, my land. Forgive me for all that. So she's praying to Lord Krishna because she's bewildered. She doesn't understand that there is a Supreme Personality of God present as her own son. So when Krishna had enough fun this way, his Yogamaya potency acted and caused Mother Yashoda to just forget everything she had seen like it was a dream. So, the vision of the universal form in Krishna's mouth went away, and Mother Yashoda just went back into mother mode completely. He is my child. I have to maintain him. I have to feed him. The amazing thing is that even when that vision was there in Krishna's mouth of the complete cosmic manifestation, Mother Yashoda never gave up her maternal affection for her boy. She never thought he was God. So, what does a mother do after feeling relief when she sees that her son is safe? The natural reaction of the mother is, let me kiss my son. So that's what Mother Yashoda, after all, Krishna is her son. He's not God. This is all arranged by the Yogamaya potency. So then you have this verse we're meditating on for today. The glories of the Supreme Personality of God are studied throughout the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Sankhya Yoga, and other Vaishnava literature. Yet Mother Yashoda considered that Supreme Person her ordinary child. This is how she renders service and doesn't give up that attitude of service even when seeing the entire cosmic manifestation in the mouth of her son. When you look at Nectar of Devotion, which I hope all of you read, Srila Prabhupada said that if you would read Nectar of Devotion every day and go on with your devotional schedule, you'll certainly go from sadhana bhakti to raghunuga bhakti just by reading Nectar Devotion every day and performing your devotional service. Even, he said, if you are doing your devotional service mechanically, we don't want to do devotional service mechanically, but Prabhupada's point was, even if you are, if you just go on and you hear Nectar Devotion every day, you will go to the platform of raga. Spontaneous love of Krishna. It will happen. Now, naturally, the quicker we try to do devotional service with care and the beginnings of love, then the quicker our Krishna consciousness will develop. But the point is, even you just push on in Krishna consciousness mechanically, still, by proper hearing and chanting and rendering service, you will go to the stage of raghunuga bhakti. On the platform of spontaneous love of Krishna, there's certain things that inspire parental love of the Lord. And we can meditate on that. Krishna's bodily features, his bodily complexion, his mildness, his sweet words, his simplicity, his shyness, his humility, his constant readiness to offer respect to the elderly, and his charity. These things are all known as udipanas. They are provocations for ecstatic parental love. This is what nectar devotion is about. What provokes your love for Krishna? Everyone likes to be provoked in love. And in fact, even in the realm of mundane romance, people remember the things that provoke the whole affair. Oh yes, when this happened, then I realized I was in love. Or when that happened, then I realized the person cared for me. So love is based on provocation. So what provokes love of Krishna? There are different things according to the particular rasa. So we just heard Rupa Goswami's list of the particular things that promote parental love of Krishna. He gives the example that when the Supreme Personality of Godhead was walking in the streets of Vrindavan, and his bodily complexion is like a bluish, newly grown lotus flower. His body is very delicate, and he has lotus eyes, Aravindaksha, and those lotus eyes are surrounded by scattered hair as black as bees. As Krishna's walking on the streets of Vrindavan, what happens when Mother Yashoda sees him? Immediately milk begins to flow from her breasts. That's the symptom of her ecstatic maternal love. Milk flows from the breast. Even though Krishna's older and he's walking in the street, still she just thinks he's my son. In fact, an interesting detail to know about life in Vrindavan is that when Krishna moves into his teenage years, between 10 and 16, Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj still treat him like he's between the ages of 5 and 10, because that's most appropriate for their maternal and paternal love. So they still treat Krishna that way. That's why you read in the Bhagavatam in Krishna book that when they meet, when Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda meet Krishna outside of Vrindavan, still they pick Krishna up and put him on their laps, because that's their relationship. Just see how wonderful a child Krishna is. He can in one sense never grow up just for the love of his parents. They never see Krishna as beyond the scope of their maternal and paternal love. In the material world, parents are always in anxiety. A good parent will put all the love and affection into a child only to see the child become a teenager and become independent. And then there's diminishing returns, because the child will have his own life as an adult and his own family. Even the parents try to hold on as grandparents of the child's children, but still it's not the same. But Krishna will not disappoint you if he becomes your son. There'll never be any depletion or diminishment in the opportunity for you to love Krishna as your son. He'll never become too old for your love or too far away for your love. Therefore, in any situation, in any kind of relationship, we're always advised, fix your love upon Krishna. Can we have more air? Somewhere? Now, when we do our devotional service, how do we act in such a way? How do we feel in such a way that we can successfully pass through the stage of sadhana bhakti and get to the stage of spontaneous love of Krishna? First of all, we have to understand that sadhana bhakti is necessary. That means to perform devotional service under rule and regulation. Srila Prabhupada once gave a very handy definition of sadhana bhakti. This is to the point. Sadhana bhakti means you have to do it because I say. Sometimes we don't like that. Sadhana bhakti means you do things out of a sense of duty for the rules and regulations of devotional service. And then later, when your health comes back, when your spiritual health comes back, you can You'll feel spontaneously, I want to do this for Krishna. But if we overlook the stage of doing things for Krishna because we have to, how will the spontaneous love develop? So the stage of following the rules and regulations, rendering service out of a sense of duty is very important. Don't minimize it. You're just doing it out of duty. That's a wonderful thing, to do something out of duty. To engage in Krishna's service, whether you feel like it or not, that is the beginning of love. Prabhupada would quote the motto for the postees of the USA. On the big main post office in New York City, there's, you know, written in Latin or something like that, the motto of the postees. Neither rain nor snow nor sleet nor hail will stop the postees from doing their duty. So that's sadhana. Never mind what happens, I'll do my duty. Don't look at that as some kind of emotionally unhealthy situation or a very barren situation. I'm just doing this because I have to. Why are you getting up in the morning, Prabhu? Because I have to. Why are you going to the programs? Because I have to. Why are you doing this particular service? Because I have to. Well, I don't know if you're going to last. I don't know how long your Krishna consciousness is going to go on. You're just doing all these things because you have to. That is a very necessary stage. And from that stage, the spontaneous feelings in the heart start to develop. And you begin to do things for Krishna automatically because you love to do it. That stage will come as a natural outgrowth of the duty stage. So there's no need for us to persecute ourselves so much about, oh, my mind, oh, it's so wild, and oh, I still have these feelings, material desires, and sometimes I'm attracted to this and that out there. And you don't have to persecute yourself. If you just focus on your spiritual duty, you'll get over those things, and the natural attraction for Krishna will arise, without a doubt. So, let's go over some pointers about devotional service. First of all, everyone knows, whether you live in the temple or not, we come across the problem of envy, because this is the material world. It just so happens that the beginning of Bhagavatam says, Paramo Namasaranam Satam. Bhagavatam is for those who are completely free of envy. But envy is the rule in the material world. You know, everyone knows what it's like to be envious of someone. You can just think about it. In the material world, if someone has more than you, you become envious. And the envy can boil to such an extent as you'll try to drag that person down. So, naturally, in our efforts to be Krishna conscious in the association of devotees, envy sometimes pops up because it's a contaminant in the material world. So you're going to see it in the hospital of bhakti. So how to deal with envy? Prabhupada gives a very nice explanation. When a man cannot tolerate his friend or other man rising more than him, he becomes envious. That is life in the material world. Even if my brother becomes greater than me, I become envious. Any of you can remember being envious of your brother or sister? I remember embarrassing situations. When I was 12 or 13 years old, I bought a very nice sweater for myself. And then one day I came home from school and I noticed that my sweater wasn't where I put it. And I immediately knew what had happened. My younger brother, who was a year and a half younger than me, he had worn my sweater to school that day, trying to impress the girls. My sweater was meant for me to impress the girls. my brother had put it on. He had dared to wear my new sweater to school. I had spent 2 hours in all the shops in the center of the city picking out his best sweater to enhance my image. 13-year-olds. The best sweater. My brother dared to wear it to school without my permission and dared to use my sweater to attract the girls. I knew just what to do. I was smaller than him, but I was faster. So, as soon as he came home, I jumped on him. I really gave it to him. He denied it. I didn't do it. Yes, we didn't get it. He still remembered that, but like 40 years later. I saw him 2 months ago. You know, he's like 45. He reminded me of that. I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. So, envy drives one to do these things. He was envious of me. I was envious of him. And so, there's a problem. So that's a fact. Even your own brother, you can become envious of. Some devotees have told me examples in their material life in which two sisters wanted the same man. Oh, I just heard about that. There's an example in Singapore. According to the Indian family system, the older brother always gets his way in terms of he's the leader of the other brothers and sisters. So, a middle brother in this Indian family was attracted to a particular girl, but the older brother also wanted her. But the girl wanted the middle brother. So there was a whole family war. In fact, the middle brother became an outcast because the parents and the older brother got on his case. Never mind that the girl wants the middle brother. Yeah. The older brother wants her because he's the older brother. He should have his way. So the whole family split. And the two brothers don't speak to each other. The middle brother, now married to the girl, doesn't even, call up his parents. He and his wife are just tired of the whole scene. So this is envy. The older brother was thinking, how dare my middle brother get someone I want? Unfortunately, the older brother was already married, but that was... But still, that didn't deter the parents from siding with him. Now, this is how, morality becomes twisted. They had some partial understanding of traditional Indian family life that, the older brother is the most important. But they couldn't understand that the older brother, he's already married. What does he have to do? They just thought, no, he's the oldest son. You should consider his desires. A complete family war. This is envy. Sometimes we see that kind of envy pop up amongst devotees. Don't commit suicide when you see it happen. I mean, you have to understand you're living in a hospital. Hospital is for sick people. So these diseases manifest from time to time. So Prabhupada is giving very nice instruction how to handle that. Bhagavad Dharma is a different thing. Paramo Namasarana. A devotee, meaning a real devotee, is never envious of another devotee. If a god brother or a devotee increases in devotion, does some increased service, the other devotee is not envious. He simply thanks him. Oh, my dear devotee, you have advanced so much in devotion, I could not do it. So I thank you for your efforts. Let me try to follow your example. That's how you conquer envy. Actually, Prabhupada explained a very interesting psychological fact. Envy is indirect appreciation because you never become envious of somebody who has done something better than you. You notice that? You never become envious of someone who has less than you. You always become envious of someone who has more than you. A better opportunity, more fame, more wealth, more beautiful associates. Those are the kind of persons you become envious of. So actually, there is appreciation. you're appreciating. You have done better. So, Prabhupada's point is then just fully appreciate without being envious. Yes, you have done better. I thank you. And let me follow your example, because by your doing what you're doing, you're showing it's possible. But materialized means, or material consciousness, even amongst devotees, means, ooh, who do you think you are? You just accomplished this because you're lucky. We'll take care of you. We'll cut the tall poppies down pretty soon. That is attending. But the devotee thinks, you have done better than me. Let me become inspired to also do something. Thank you for your example. Because all the service is for Krishna. Sometimes we act like if someone does something in Krishna consciousness, that reduces the chances for me to do it. It's actually not like that. Although I agree, it can appear to look like that because that's to our material vision. Because you are excelling in devotional service, there's less chance for me. Just like I said last night when I was first reading a Krishna book, and I wasn't associating with devotees, so I just respected it. I thought, oh, the spiritual world sounds so glorious. Let me hurry up and go there before it gets overcrowded. So similarly, that sounds ridiculous, but just think about our attitude. Oh, this Prabhu is doing nice service. As if that reduces the opportunity for me to do nice service. Actually, the reverse is true. We were explaining a few days ago about the Panchatattva. The more the Panchatattva dances, the more the flood of love of God increases. The more service there is, the more chanting of Hare Krishna there is, the more it's easier to serve Krishna. So it's just the opposite of the material principle, that if you've got something, then I can't get it. The thing becomes scarce, the resources become scarce because you've got it. No, in bhakti, because you've got it, it makes it easier for me to get it. This is a spiritual principle which is not understood by material intelligence. So we should follow Prabhupada's advice, his psychological advice here about devotional service. When someone does something nice for Krishna, you thank that person knowing you're making it easier for me to serve Krishna. You're inspiring me. Okay, you did something. Now, I hope I can also do something for Krishna. Based on that spiritual desire, Krishna will arrange for you. But I know, I admit to our sometimes material vision, it doesn't look this way. It looks like you are doing something that means less chance for me. So we all have to deal with this in our bhakti yoga careers. It takes some thought and some concentration. How to recognize that someone else's increased service does not diminish your opportunities. Don't be lured into that trap. Don't be fooled. Things don't work like that in the spiritual world. How do they work in the spiritual world? Prabhupada gives us a nice picture here. Just like Radharani and the gopis, they're on the same status, but the gopis know Radharani is the better worshiper than us. Therefore, our only business is how to take Radharani and join her with Krishna. Well, that's the Vrindavan understanding. Krishna likes her better? Okay, let's help her to be with Krishna more. They're not envious that Krishna loves Radharani so much. No, no, not at all. They wanted that. Krishna loves Radharani so much, and Radharani loves Krishna so much, let's join them together. So they're happy doing that. This is Vrindavan appreciation. And Prabhupada gives an example from the material world. What happens in the world of Maya? What happens when, oh, this girl has got such a nice lover. What can we do to break it up? That's material consciousness. But in Vrindavan, everything is for Krishna's pleasure. In fact, sometimes there is what appears to be envy But it's all for Krishna's pleasure. Another group of gopis will become angry that Krishna's spending time with this group of gopis and not us. But why are they doing it? Because they know Krishna enjoys it. They know that Krishna enjoys their competition. So everything is done for Krishna's pleasure. I've given the example before, briefly. Every young man knows, if you hear that there's some girls competing for you, how do you feel? Or how would you feel? Yes. It's like a real luxurious feeling, yeah? I won't ask if it's happened to you, but you can imagine. Yes, yes, this is what life's all about. 2, 3, 4, 5 of them all competing for me. All vying for me. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. He's actually entitled to that. You're not entitled to anything. So, the gopis do that for Krishna's pleasure. He's spending too much time with that one. Why isn't he spending time with us? Send a messenger quick to the cowherd boys, and then have the message conveyed to Krishna. He better watch it. Spending too much time with the other group. That's all for Krishna's pleasure. Of course, this subject is not so much for general public at all, but because this is morning Bhagavatam class, we're speaking about these things, and there are some guests here. But, all right. So we don't deny that envy sometimes creeps into our dealings, because this is the material world. We're coming from the material world, but we should learn how to deal with it. Remember, envy is indirect appreciation. So take Prabhupada's advice and just turn the situation upside down and just appreciate it. Yes, you are better. You have done better. I could not have done as well, but I'll try now. By your example, you're inspiring me to try harder. I hope I can do something like you. That's how you flip the envy over. Rather than just, you know, it's a horrible feeling, envy. It feels ugly, doesn't it? And then you start to scheme and make plans. That's when envy really becomes bad, when it becomes more than a mental attitude, but it goes into action. Let's do something about it. Let's make this person's life miserable. Let's do something to bring this person down, and things become very hellish. So let us just appreciate everyone and try to learn from everyone, knowing that the opportunities to serve Krishna will never become reduced because someone's doing nicely. Okay. That's one point about our bhakti bhava, our service to Krishna, the feelings of emotion. What else? Guidance. Devotional service in this material world can get a bit complicated, and every devotee is going to encounter some situation which is a little tricky. How am I supposed to serve Krishna in this circumstance? I don't see any way out. I don't see what the right thing to do is. Arjuna was in that circumstance in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, the Kurukshetra war. How can I fight? The other side is full of friends and relatives and former teachers. I can't do this. It's just too complicated, too bewildering. Arjuna is shown by his example. Yes, these things will happen. Don't be surprised, but don't become depressed. One has to know how to take guidance, because that is Krishna's system. But what happens when you get into these tricky or difficult circumstances? What happens? The material energy begins to speak to you. No one else can understand this situation. No one else has ever been in this situation before. Only you know how you're feeling. Only you understand it, because you're in it and it's happening to you. No need to take any advice. How can anyone know you better than you? Just make up your own mind and deal with it yourself. Or, if you are going to consult others about it, make sure you consult someone who you know is going to agree with you. That's how you do it. I consult, I'm taking guidance. You call up your best friend who agrees with whatever you do, because that's why he or she's your best friend. What do you think, huh? You think I should do it? Yeah, yeah, sure, what the heck, go on, go on. Hey, see, I'm talking to others. Now, always be ready to hear a contrary opinion, and that's why everyone needs guidance, which is capable of giving contrary opinions. Otherwise, what's the use in taking guidance? Just like when Arjuna approached Krishna, Krishna didn't exactly tell Arjuna what he wanted to hear. He told him, no, you must fight. Everyone needs that kind of guidance in their life. So let's hear a situation. A real live example from 1972 in which Prabhupada was very emotionally writing to a disciple who was not taking guidance. This particular disciple, Prabhupada, I know, he had a vision that this disciple would be a big leader. The devotee had those kind of abilities, leadership qualities, leadership vision. And Prabhupada has sent the devotee pioneering to Europe to establish Krishna consciousness in Scandinavia. So, something happened, bad association, and the devotee just kind of tuned out, even tuned out Srila Prabhupada. So this is what Prabhupada writes him. You may know it, that I am eternally your guide, but if you don't accept me as your guide, what can I do? Unfortunately, if my disciples do not take my guidance, what can I do? By bad association, it so happens. So I remain silent. I see the pricks of Maya. Eternally, I want to remain your guide, provided you want to accept me. You mentioned that your path has become filled with stumbling blocks, but there are no stumbling blocks. I can kick them all out immediately, provided you accept my guidance. With one kick, I can kick out all stumbling blocks. You are always welcome. All your doubts will be cleared up, either personally, face to face, or by correspondence with me. I'm going to Los Angeles. You can come to live with me and all your doubts will be erased. In the beginning, you had no doubts, but by bad association, now you have doubts. Very important lessons for us. What causes problems? Bad association. And how to deal with those problems? You see, to be a devotee in the association of devotees, you have to learn two things. To respect everyone and to think you're the servant of everyone, but you have to be a bit selective how you take advice. So sometimes we mix these two things together. That, well, since you have to be selective about who you take advice from, you also have to be selective about who you respect. No, these are two different things. Respect everyone who says Hare Krishna. Unless they are an offender. They're offending Krishna's devotees. No, if that's not happening, you respect everyone who says Hare Krishna. But that doesn't mean you take advice from everyone who walks in the door and says Hare Krishna. You have to discriminate between these two things. Who you take advice from, guidance, that's special. Now, sometimes the devotees make the calculation that since we respect everyone, you don't take guidance from everyone. No, one must take guidance to advance and block the otherwise. Sooner or later, some stumbling block comes, as Prabhupada is describing. Here, Prabhupada is asserting, with one kick, I can finish all stumbling blocks. I can kick them all out. This is the protection that the spiritual master gives to the disciple. One kick, and all the stumbling blocks go. But Prabhupada's pointing out, you have to want that. Otherwise, he said, what can I do? He said, I'm watching, I'm seeing how because of your bad association, stumbling blocks are coming. I know what's going on. I'm remaining silent. I see it all. I watch you being pricked by Maya. What can I do? I am eternally your guide as long as you want to accept me in that way. So then he invites the devotee. All your doubts will be cleared up personally, face to face, or by correspondence with me. Devotees should be very careful that they accept guidance from someone they can have a personal relationship with, because when the doubts come, where will your shelter be? Unless you have the opportunity for personal association. Prabhupada is offering the solution. And that was available in the early days of Islam. Later, as things became so big, it was very difficult, not impossible, to get Prabhupada's personal association for all his disciples. But he said, giving so many books and training up leaders. Still, Murugan Prabhu told me how Prabhupada told him, I wish I could personally train all my disciples. So we should understand that the way the material world works, sooner or later, I'm going to be in Arjuna's situation. Where will my guidance be? Will I have a chance to get enough personal association and care so my doubts will be cleared? The Prabhupada was offering that to this particular devotee. You're always welcome. All your doubts will be cleared up, either personally, face to face, or by correspondence with me. You can come live with me, and all your doubts will be erased. In the beginning, you had no doubts, but by bad association, now you have doubts. Then the letter gets interesting even more. He says, regarding your questions, you say that amongst the elder disciples, there are still symptoms of greed, anger, strife, bickering, and so forth. But you're one of them. The devotees obviously complain to Prabhupada. Amongst the senior devotees, you know, there's sometimes arguments, there's anger, there's that. Prabhupada just turns it back on them. But aren't you a senior devotee too? In other words, you're not beyond these things. So he explains. So the fighting is among that group, but they are not the real. But the fighting doesn't go on amongst the real devotees. But then he takes it another way and says, actually, there was fighting amongst the gopis in the spiritual world also. So we cannot expect that there will be some utopia without fighting. Even in the spiritual world, there's transcendental greed, lust, and envy, but it's all transcendental. So then Prabhupada refers to such and such a devotee, he names him. You're having a fight with him, but he's maintaining his position of service. He hasn't gone away. So why, just because of a little quarreling, should you go away? In other words, the other devotee who you're fighting with, he's going on with his service. He hasn't given up his position. I can't take it, the quarreling. Forget this devotional service. But what Prabhupada said, but you've done that. Simply because of a little quarreling, you've given up your duty. We should never give up our duty. And then Prabhupada gives his own example. My God brothers always discourage me, but I did not give up. I'm doing my duty and always keeping my spiritual master in front. Even if there is some difficulty or hardship, or even my God brothers may not cooperate, or there may be quarreling, still I must perform my duty to my spiritual master and not become discouraged and go away. If I do that, that is my weakness. An interesting letter about practical situations in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada is not covering up or denying that sometimes there's quarreling amongst devotees. On the one hand, he says, actually, a real devotee won't quarrel. But then on the other hand, he says, actually, there's quarreling in the spiritual world also. Even though it's all transcendental, still it's quarreling. So we cannot expect some kind of dreamy utopia in the material world where there's no quarreling. But how do you deal with that quarreling? You go on with your duty. You don't abandon your service. Oh, I can't take it anymore. The problem's playing out. The other devotee who you're quarreling with, who you're mentioning, he hasn't given up his position of service. So why did you go away? We should never give up our duty. Let's see what else we can find. How is it that devotees feel from day to day? I know from talking to many of you that sometimes you feel fired up and sometimes not. Sometimes you feel like, this is it, bhakti,
yes.
And sometimes, sometimes you stare at the deities in rapture, and then sometimes when you go through on Columbo Street, you're staring at other things. So this causes a little disturbance, and we have to understand how this works. Once you understand what's going on, then you won't be so easily intimidated by this. You're just dealing with reality. What is reality? Prabhupada explains that here. There are always two things side by side, Maya and Krishna. You get used to it. That's the way it is. Krishna is service, and Maya is sense gratification. So every moment, we are prone to be subjugated by either one of them. Our duty is therefore to be very, very careful. The poison is personal ambition. Interesting point. So everyone has the chance. Therefore, one should not be complacent. Everyone has the chance to serve Krishna, so one should not be complacent. There'll always be two things side by side, Maya and Krishna. It's just that the devotee always chooses Krishna. In the first canto of Bhagavatam, you read about how Vyasadeva, in his perfect realization of the Supreme Lord, saw Krishna and Maya side by side. But he saw Maya behind Krishna. Not that we see Maya and then, you know, the less importance is Krishna. That's the view of a neophyte devotee. Ah, there's so many powerful materialities and practicalities and necessities I have to deal with. And then there's also little Krishna too. Now, the proper vision is there's always big Krishna, the big necessity. Prema, Pramaka, Mahan, to develop the love of God. And then there's these other things I have to do. That's the proper way to see things. So please don't become intimidated. How many days and years can I go on like this? The choice. Every day, Maya and Krishna, I see them side by side. The fact that there's an opportunity to choose means there's an opportunity to love. Because there cannot be love without choice. You just have to get used to that. Otherwise, we're impersonalists. Because you're a sentient being, you have the power to choose, and therefore there can be love. So every day is an opportunity to show the beginnings of love for Krishna by choosing Krishna amongst the two things side by side, Maya and Krishna. All right. Are there any questions for today?
You just mentioned that line, Prabhupada said, the poison is personal ambition.
That disturbs devotional service when devotees have a personal ambition for their own sense gratification to do things so called for Krishna, but actually it's for their own name and fame and profit and distinction. If I do this, I'll be known as a famous devotee. If I do this, that'll fulfill my personal desires. Let me get such and such a title or status in devotional service, then I'll be known as a powerful devotee. That's personal ambition. Not thinking what is best for Krishna's pleasure, thinking what's best for my own preeminence.
how does one discriminate who not to take guidance from?
You have to know the Shastra, and then you can recognize who is fully engaged in devotional service, who is trying to fulfill Prabhupada's desires. If you don't know that, then you have to learn. That's why we say study the books. You have that individual responsibility. You can't push it on someone else. You have to know what is what. So you look at the person you want to take advice from and see, is this person attached to the glories of Lord Krishna? Is this person attached to being a humble servant of Srila Prabhupada? Is this person realizing that Krishna's service is everything? And can this person give me advice how I can accept the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita? That's your responsibility. Otherwise, if you just go up to get advice to anyone who walks in the door, that's your mistake. That's not what the Shastra advises. You have to discriminate. It's not a bad thing to discriminate. It's your duty to discriminate. You have to understand the spiritual standings of devotees. It's not a utopia in which all devotees are, because they have a Sanskrit name where neck beats, doesn't mean that they all have the same realization. So you have to judge by sound vibration, by behavior. Very important point. And being selective in who you take advice from doesn't mean disrespect to everyone. They're two different things. Respecting everyone who says Hare Krishna, who's not an offender, and taking guidance. They're two different things. You can't go to one extreme or the other. Because I'm not taking guidance from you, I don't have to respect you. You're just an ordinary devotee who chants Hare Krishna. This is neophyte behavior. And then there's the other extreme. Well, because you have a Sanskrit name, you're in that beat, you say Hare Krishna. What do you think? Tell me. Give me some advice. You know? What do you think? Huh? Not so bad to, you know, go to movies and clubs?
Okay.
Yeah, sounds cool to me. Have you heard of Devotee? A neck beats on? Yeah. Same thing? Yeah.
Okay.
Movies, clubs, you know, flexibility? Yeah. And, hey, I was just talking to such and such Prabhu, and he or she, you know, said, hey, just go for it. I'm like, oh, yeah, so yeah. That's the other excuse. Both extremes go on, unfortunately. No, we cannot confuse these two things. Respecting everyone who is chanting Hare Krishna is not an offender, while at the same time discriminating about who we take advice from. Any other questions?
Yes? You should say that kind of
desire for distinction and stuff, and then it's going to really cut with your sinner. Mm-hmm. Did you have any deal with it? Because you have a lot of good, but it's like a one-to-one revelation. Yes, that's, you just reminded me of one quote I wanted to read and see if I can quickly find it. Mm-hmm. By the grace of Krishna, practically all the devotees and disciples who have kindly joined me, they all have symptoms of pure devotees. even if they've got some ulterior desire, personal ambition, that will be removed very soon because they have taken to the pure process of Krishna consciousness. So that is the point, to take to the pure process of Krishna consciousness. And then even if you have ulterior motives, I'm doing this so I can have name and fame. I'm doing this to get respect. I'm doing this to, you know, so I can feel that I'm great. Just by your engaging in the pure process of devotional service, those things will go. So in that sense, Prabhupada is generously saying, all my devotees are pure, in that if they stick with the process properly, these motives will go. So render devotional service with great determination. You'll find that to actually do your duty will purify you, because not every day you're going to feel like doing it. Isn't that every morning you wake up and, another day I go in this restaurant. Oh, I love it. Another day of standing behind the counter, serving the side. Wow, I can't wait. But that day will come when you feel like that. It will come. In the beginning, you may think, well, I got a position, I'm in charge, so now I have something. At least everyone knows I've got abilities around here. At least they know I'm competent. That's something. But later, out of purification, you'll just thank Krishna. I'm so happy you gave me an opportunity to serve you any kind of way. I don't deserve anything, but you give me an opportunity to engage in your service. But in the beginning, we have ulterior motives. I'll be enthusiastic if I'm in charge. But what if Krishna doesn't want you to be in charge for now? I told you a few days ago, like, histories of some devotees, history of myself trying to be a devotee. Very few started off immediately having responsibility in Krishna consciousness. We just all thought, I'm washing pots, I'm distributing books, I'm this or that, I'm so thankful to do some service for Krishna. I mean, and if there was some absorption, some concentration on that so-called little service, Krishna gained more abilities. But in the beginning, if you have some attachment, that attachment can be recognized and dealt with in such a way that you can use it in Krishna's service and gradually become purified. Krishna deals with devotees differently. For some devotees, Krishna allows that devotee to have his or her attachments honored temporarily. For others, Krishna doesn't allow. In any case, Krishna is the best doctor in the hospital. So, don't make the mistake of looking around and, what about that devotee? That devotee can do whatever he or she wants. Why not me? No, don't do that. Always try to understand what Krishna wants from you, because everything is personal. Love is the most personal thing. So if Krishna is personally arranging something for you, why are you looking over somebody else? Well, treat me like that! No. Be open to whatever Krishna wants to arrange for your purification. So if it's being in charge of something, then be in charge in a humble way, knowing that when you're in charge of something in Krishna consciousness, it means you're the biggest servant. Now, see, only been in the temple 6 months and I'm in charge. See that as an opportunity to be the humble servant of everyone. That's what leadership in Krishna consciousness means. A chance to be the best servant. Even if you're doing the service of being guru and you think that you indeed are master, you've got big problems. You have to think, I'm the servant of the devotees. I'm doing this service for them. You definitely have to think that, because it's not only you get all the praise, you get their karma too. I mean, it's bad enough to have to deal with your own super reaction, but others pile on top of yours. So, ulterior motives can be dealt with in Krishna's service if you follow the pure process of bhakti. So don't harass yourself. Oh, I've got ulterior motives. I'd like being in charge of the Don't you have to persecute yourself. Just do the service, knowing that if you execute bhakti yoga properly, you will be purified. I will be purified. Everyone will be purified by following the pure process of bhakti yoga. Just like we read the other day, remember though, where Prabhupada was telling a devotee, there's nothing wrong in you feeling attached to your service. See if I can quickly find it. There is not at all inappropriate attachment when you're attached to your service. Rather, it is your qualification for pleasing your spiritual master. Attachment must be there for Krishna or for Maya. So you have become attached to such and such service. That is Krishna's work. So Krishna appreciates very much when his devotee becomes attached to him in this way. Attachment to your duty is the beginning of love. It's hard to understand because Western so-called love psychology is so screwed up. You know, it's like love means you're walking past someone and all of a sudden, wow. Or you've been associating in the same vicinity with someone for a while and you didn't think much about that person, but then one day, that's called love. That's why there's an expression in India. Don't marry the girl that you love. Love the girl you marry. Why? The whole point is real affection springs out of duty and commitment, whereas the other stuff that fades so quickly. Similarly, lasting Krishna consciousness comes from duty and commitment. That's the springboard for real love. Not that, I feel fired up today, okay, yeah, I'll serve today. And then the next day, I don't feel so fired up. What am I doing here? What are my old friends doing? Duty and commitment is the forerunner of love. That is the message of the first half of Nectar Devotion. All right, Hare Krishna, glory to the Lord.